Charles Thomas Studd, or C.T. Studd, as he is better known, was a missionary who sacrificed his wealth and his health for the cause of Jesus Christ. He is probably best known for that statement that is found in various forms, and sometimes you will see them in people's homes on little plaques. Maybe you have it already in your own home. But he's well known for those words: if Jesus Christ be God and died for me, then no sacrifice can be too great for me to make for him. If Jesus Christ be God and died for me, then no sacrifice can be too great for me to make for him. And what he said was indeed the principles by which he lived. And as I've mentioned, he is looked upon as a servant of the cross who sacrificed his wealth and his health for the cause of Jesus Christ. As a missionary, C.T. Studd had a particular burden for the unevangelized parts of the world. And in that regard, he was a little like the Apostle Paul. He wanted to take the gospel to places where it had not been. He didn't necessarily want to build on another man's labors and to go over ground where someone else had already been, but he wanted to press into areas where the gospel had never reached. And as a result of that, he went, first of all, to China in connection with Hudson Taylor and the China Inland Mission. Then he went to serve the Lord in southern India. And then, at the last, he went to the heart of Africa to labor there among those who had never heard of the gospel. In later life, C.T. Studd said this, and I quote, "I have tasted all the pleasures of the world, but none gave me so much pleasure as bringing a soul to Christ, to trust in the Lord Jesus." No, nothing gave him more pleasure than that. And as we'll see a little bit about his life, he had a very privileged upbringing. And he actually married a lady from a fellow missionary from Lisburn. Her name was Priscilla Stewart. I don't know if you know much about C.T. Studd and his life in that regard, but his wife was a missionary in China before he arrived there, and he met her and they subsequently married. But she was from Lisburn, and her name was Priscilla Stewart. But he said, "I have tasted all the pleasures of the world, but nothing gives me so much pleasure as pointing a soul to Jesus Christ." Now, C.T. Studd was born in England in 1860, the 2nd of December, 1860. Therefore, this year marks the 160th anniversary of his birth. He died when he was 70 years old, 1931, in what was known then as the Belgian Congo. And as we mark this anniversary and consider some things with regards to this man's life, I trust the Lord will give us a burning zeal, not just for the souls of men and women. That's taken as for granted. It ought to be the case among us as the people of God, but a burning zeal for the unreached and the unevangelized. And sadly, we don't have to go to China or India or the heart of Africa to find such people tonight. There's those that are very close by us. They live amongst us. There's many who are unreached. There's many who are unevangelized. They're on our doorstep tonight. As we know all too well, there's those around about us, and even though they might live in this land, and yet they know nothing of the gospel, and they know nothing of the story of Jesus Christ and his amazing love for sinners. What I want us to do, first of all, with regards to C.T. Studd, and as a result of this, we're going to have to spread this over a couple of nights, God willing, so we're only going to cover the early part of his life. Because what I want to do, first of all, is think a little bit about the intervention of divine grace in his family. Because that's really where the story of C.T. Studd commences. As I've already said, he had a very privileged upbringing. His father, Edward Studd, was born in India, and he made a fortune in India as a trader, and he retired to England with the intentions of spending and enjoying that fortune that he had made in India. And on the 6th of November 1856, his father married for a second time, And there were five sons and a daughter that were the offspring of this second marriage. And C.T. Studd was one of those children born of that second marriage. Now, his father was a man of the world. He was a keen huntsman. He was master of the hounds in the area that he lived. He loved playing cards. He loved attending the theatre. His two great passions, this is C.T. Studd's father, his two great passions were horse racing and cricket. In 1871, his father took the lease on a property. It's called Tedworth House. It's still in existence today. It's used by Help for Heroes, if you know anything of that charity, for veterans. That building has a long connection with the military. But way back in 1871, Edward Studd took the lease on that property. It's on the Hampshire-Wiltshire border. And it had a lot of land. And on that property, he established his own horse racing training facility, stabling about 20 race horses, and also built a racetrack that was known as Tedworth Park. The pinnacle of his father's success with horse racing was the winning of the 1866 Grand National on a 40-1 outsider called Salamander. His father's obsession and the family's obsession with horse racing generally is evident when Salamander, that horse that had won the Grand National, later fell ill and had to be put down. And it is said that the entire Studd family came down to dinner dressed in black. Such was the grief over the loss of this wonderful horse that they had. His father trained up another horse called Dispatch, and it took second place 5 years later in the 1871 Grand National. So you see something of his father's love for horse racing, his father's way of the world. He was a man of the world, and he had amassed this fortune, and he was going to spend it, as he thought, enjoying the pleasures of this world. His other love was cricket, and his father caused one of the paddocks in this extensive estate that he had now leased to be turned into a first-rate cricket pitch for his sons to play cricket in the summer months when they were home from Eton during the summer holidays from school. The fact that the children went to Eton will give you another insight into the very privileged upbringing that C.T. Studd had and just the wealth that was in his family. However, his father, Edward Studd, died at the young age of 58 in 1877. But in the mercy and in the grace of God, the Lord saved his father 2 years before he died in 1875. And it was a marvelous intervention of divine grace into this man's life and into this family, because as a result of saving that father, he was also going to save his sons. And three of this man's sons, C.T. Studd being one of them, were saved on the very same weekend. A marvelous intervention of divine grace. And it does remind us of how the Lord does indeed work, that he can come to those who have got no gospel background at all, and in his mercy he can intervene into their lives and bring about circumstances whereby they are confronted with the claims of the gospel and where grace triumphs in their heart and brings them to a saving knowledge of the Lord. And that was very true with Edward Studd. He had no interest in the gospel. He had no interest in going to hear the gospel preached. But the Lord saved a very good friend of Edward Studd's, a man called Mr. Vincent. He also was a horse racing fanatic and a close colleague of Edward Studd. Many a time they had gone to horse races, and they had even come over to Ireland, to Punchestown, down in Kildare, to attend horse racing and to buy horses. So these two men were very close. And it was on one occasion when Mr. Vincent was over in Punchestown that he ended up in very unusual circumstances to hear D.L. Moody preach. He had been to Punchestown to watch a horse race that he was intending to buy, and he was hoping to get back to Dublin and to catch a particular boat. He was 5 minutes late when he got to the dock. The boat had already left. And therefore, it was the last boat across the Irish Sea for that day, so he was going to have to stay in Dublin for the night. He went and booked into an hotel, and he went out around the city of Dublin. He was walking down the street, and he saw this sign, and it said, D.L. Moody and Sankey. And he thought, I wonder who they are. Never heard them in the theatre. I'll go in to see what this is all about. Little did he know that he wasn't going in to watch a play. He wasn't going in to watch some performance that was put on for the entertainment of the ungodly. He was going into a gospel meeting. But such was the power of the preaching that this man, Mr. Vincent, got saved that night. And it changed his life as a result of hearing D.L. Moody preach the gospel. He went back to England with a desire to win his friends and tell his friends of the gospel. And one of those friends was going to be Edward Studd, C.T. Studd's father. C.T. Studd's father, Edward, had invited this friend, Mr. Vincent, to go to a horse race. And he said to the man, if you come to the horse race, I will do whatever you want me to do. As a result, he says, this horse is absolutely brilliant, and I believe it's going to win the race, and I want you to be there, and I'll do whatever you want in return. So Mr. Vincent saw the opportunity. He went along to the horse race, and then afterwards he said to Edward Studd, now I want you to come with me. I want you to come with me to Drury Lane Theatre in London, but you're not coming to watch a play. You're coming to hear D.L. Moody preach. Edward Studd tried to back out of his promise initially, but being a man of his word, he realized that he could not break the promise that he had made to a dear friend. And therefore, he went along with his friend to Drury Lane Theatre in London to hear D.L. Moody preached. If you know anything about Moody's meetings in London, and anywhere he went, he was here in Belfast on three occasions preaching, and his congregations were packed out. The buildings wherever he was preaching were packed out, and it was no different that night when Mr. Vincent and Edward Studd arrived at the venue for Drury Lane Theatre. The place was packed out, and there were no more seats. And the story is told that Mr. Vincent wrote a note, and he gave it to the doorman, and he said, take that to the preacher. So the message went in, and it was taken up to the preacher, and the message was opened, and it was read, and it said something along the lines, I have brought a friend to this meeting, and if I do not get him in under the gospel, he will never, ever come under the gospel again. Get us a seat. So when the preacher heard that such a message, and that there were such two men standing outside, there was two seats found for them, and it is said that the place was completely packed, and that Edward Studd and his friend Mr. Vincent ended up sitting right under the preacher in Drury Lane Theatre. And for the first time, Edward Studd heard the gospel preached. And as a result of that first meeting and the wonderful circumstances that brought it about, that he would be under the sound of the gospel, he said to his friend Mr. Vincent as he was leaving, I will come to hear this man again. He has just told me everything I have done. I will come to hear this man again. He has just told me everything I have ever done. Now you can stand and marvel at the providence of God and all of those little details and circumstances that all fell into place to bring that man under the gospel, even to save his friend as well. 5 minutes late. If he had not been 5 minutes late, that man, Mr. Vincent, and had not missed that boat, what a different course his life and possibly the life of Edward Studd and his family would have taken. Maybe it's well worth remembering that sometimes it's not always appropriate to be late, but sometimes it's in the overruling providence of God. Now the Lord is working out his purposes. And you only have to stand and marvel and just think about all the little details that fall into place. Because when God begins to work in a man's life and God sets out to save a man, the Lord will indeed do that. And he will do it through many circumstances. And he will overrule circumstances and bring circumstances to pass to bring it about that a man or a woman will be brought under the sound of the gospel. And so it was with Edward Studd. Again, he kept his promise. He went back. In fact, he went back to the meetings each night until eventually he came to Christ. And Edward Studd was saved by the mighty grace of God. And in an instant, the ambition of this first-class race horse trainer and owner was exchanged for a desire to serve and honour Christ. Back in that property that he had leased, with all the potential that he thought for horse racing and cricket, he shocked his relatives and the staff that he employed by selling his horses and giving up racing. He replaced much of the fine furniture in the house with benches and chairs so that he could hold prayer meetings in the hall on a Lord's Day evening. The transformation was summed up by his coachman. When someone asked, who was a guest at the house, if his master had become religious or something, and the coachman replied, "Well, sir, we don't know much about that, but all I can say is that though there's the same skin, there's a new man inside." So that's with the testimony of his coachman. As I said, Edward Studd, C.T. Studd's father, only lived 2 more years. But at his funeral, it was said that Edward Studd had done more in 2 years than most Christians accomplish in 20. He had a passion to tell others of the gospel. And I've explained a little bit, although the message tonight and what we're thinking about is an anniversary is not so much on C.T. Studd's father. But if we want to know something about C.T. Studd, here is where that passion to reach souls came from. His father had that passion. And he held those meetings. And those meetings that he held played a very significant part in the salvation of C.T. Studd. Because C.T. Studd was 15 years old when his father was converted to Christ. He was a pupil at Eton College, that very prestigious school, even to this day. His brothers and he, 3 brothers, were at Eton. None of them had knew that his father had been converted when they received an invitation from their father to come and to join him in London. Now, they assumed that, as this had been an occurrence in previous times, that he was going to take them to some theatre and give them the pleasure of enjoying some show. And they thought that this is what it's going to be again. Sure, we have received an invitation like this on a number of occasions beforehand. So the three sons made their way to London to meet up with their father. And to their shock and to their surprise, his father didn't take them to see a show. He took them to a theatre, all right. But he took them to hear D.L. Moody preach. C.T. Studd said that he thought that religion was just something for Sundays. But he soon discovered in the life of his father that it was something that takes over your whole life. His father had a great burden that his sons would be saved, and that they would be won for Christ. And in a sense, he felt that he had to make up for wasted time when he had lived for the world and he had sought his fortune and had spent much of it already. But he wanted now to see his sons won for Christ. And it said that he never missed an opportunity to witness to them and to exhort them to come to Christ. I've mentioned how his father had started to hold meetings in that building, that home that they had rented, Tedworth Hall. And very often, as a result of various different preachers coming to speak, that they would end up staying in the family home over the weekend. And it was on one such occasion that C.T. Studd and his 3 brothers came to Christ all over one weekend. I can only give you a little snippet of the background to it. I encourage you to read up on it if you haven't already done so. But the 3 boys were mischievous, as you would imagine, 3 sons, and they thought that they would play a game or two on the preacher and have a bit of fun themselves. After all, they weren't saved and didn't really have a big lot of regard for him. So they thought, well, why don't we all go out horse riding? And the preacher had no experience of horse riding at all, and the boys took great pleasure in seeing him nearly fall off a number of times. And they said that even their father saw the funny side of it as well, and he was laughing. But the old preacher, he was happy that the boys would have a bit of fun at his expense, because over the course of that weekend, he got them one by one on their own. And he started to speak to them. He said, "Are you a Christian? Have you ever believed in Jesus Christ to the saving of your soul?" And he took them to this gospel text that's so well known, John's Gospel, chapter 3 and verse 16. And he brought the truth of this text before C.T. Studd, because C.T. Studd relates how indeed that man witnessed to him. He was by the name of Mr. Weatherby. And he witnessed to C.T. Studd and he challenged him, "Have you believed?" And he quoted this verse, "Whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life." And he challenged him, "Have you everlasting life? Have you believed on him?" C.T. Studd had to answer, "I haven't believed on him, but I go to church." But the man wasn't interested in whether he went to church or not. He wanted to know, had he trusted in Jesus Christ? And that weekend, that man, Mr. Weatherby, cornered each of those three boys, challenged them about the gospel, and unknown to one another, he led the three of them to the Lord. And C.T. Studd said himself that the preacher had the last laugh because he got them in the net, the gospel net. They had their fun with the preacher, but he won them for Christ. It was only after they had gone back to Eton and that their father had sent them a joint letter that they discovered that each other of the brothers had come to Christ on that very same weekend. C.T. Studd recalled that moment later on in life, and here's what he said. "I got down on my knees, and I did say thank you to God. And right then and there, joy and peace came into my soul. I knew then what it was to be born again. And the Bible, which had been so dry to me before, became everything." It became everything. And that is very true with regards to C.T. Studd. The Bible became everything to him. And how amazing is the grace of God and how it intervenes in anyone's life. We can testify of that in our own lives. And at times we do hear marvelous accounts of conversion and how the Lord is pleased to intervene. But wherever and however an individual is saved, it's a marvelous intervention of grace. It mightn't be in the same circumstances as C.T. Studd. It mightn't be somebody who had such a privileged background and the Lord, a family that had no gospel heritage at all, and the Lord intervenes. Whatever way the Lord does, it's a marvelous intervention of his grace. And we certainly should take encouragement tonight when you think of loved ones that you pray for. Maybe they don't come under the sound of the gospel the way you like. The Lord can intervene in their lives. The Lord overrules circumstances. He's the God of providence. He can ordain circumstances that they can be challenged with the gospel. And even when there isn't an interest in hearing and listening, as C.T. Studd testified, they didn't really have an ear to hear when the preachers came to visit the family home and preach. But nevertheless, the Lord overruled and saved him. So there's the conversion of C.T. Studd. I want you in the second place to think a little bit about the snare that sport became to C.T. Studd. Now, he's well known as a cricketer himself, C.T. Studd, but he also had to confess and to testify that sport became a snare to him. As I've mentioned, he and his two brothers attended Eton, one of those most prestigious schools that there are in England. And it is true that after their conversion, they did nail their colours to the mast and they commenced a Bible class in the school. And they sought to invite their friends into that Bible class and witness to them and have Bible studies. In fact, a number of those boys later came to Christ. Some of them went on to serve the Lord in the cause of God in their own right and became well-known individuals. Maybe not just as well-known as C.T. Studd, but certainly well-known in the work of God. So at the beginning, they did take their stand for the Lord. And the three of them, as I say, the three of them stood for the Lord and started the Bible class. But those three brothers excelled at cricket. There's only once in the history of Eton College that three brothers have played in the same first 11 cricket team. And it was in 1877, and those three brothers were the Studd brothers. Canaston, George, and then the youngest of the three of them, Charles, or C.T. Studd. In 1877, that year that they played together in the team, they beat their great rivals, Harrow. During the first innings of one match against Winchester, the oldest brother, Canaston, scored 52 runs, the second brother, George, scored 54 runs, and the youngest, Charles, scored 53 runs. Gives you just a little insight into how remarkable a cricketer each of them was. C.T. Studd was probably the best of them all. He was a supreme all-rounder. He said himself that he spent hours practicing his batting by standing in the front of a tall mirror in his home, in his father's home, that was in the bedroom, and there he would practice his body. And it was his determination always to play with a straight bat. And if you know anything of cricket and terminology, you'll maybe know the significance of some of those terms. But it was his determination to always play with a straight bat. And there was a line in the carpet that went up towards the mirror on the wardrobe. And he would practice for hour after hour, lining up his bat with the line on the carpet, pretending that he was standing at the crease and the ball was coming towards the stumps. He was so dedicated to becoming the best a cricketer he could be that he would not smoke himself. And remember, people didn't realize the dangers of smoking, even Christians back in the 1800s. But he wouldn't smoke, nor would he remain where others were smoking after a dinner. And as you know anything as well of that type of upbringing, privileged upbringing, they would have their dinners and then the men would retire to their smoking room and C.T. Studd wouldn't remain in their company. He did not want the smoke to cause any deterioration in his eyesight because he knew that he would not be able to pick up the ball coming towards him if in any way his eyesight deteriorated. He was so dedicated. It became everything to him. It took over his life. And he testifies himself that for 6 years, he was in a backslidden state as a result of the obsession of cricket in his life. From the year 1877, the year that his father died, until 1883, he lived in a cold and a backslidden state. He acknowledged this later on because he came back to the Lord and he gave the reason why such a thing had happened. And I quote, and here's what he had to say. "Instead of going and telling others of the love of Christ, I was selfish and kept the knowledge to myself. The result was that gradually my love began to grow cold, and the love of the world began to come in. I spent 6 years in that unhappy, backslidden state." Now, during that period of 6 years, he was lauded for being the cricketer that he was, and we'll mention a few of those things just here in a moment, but he was lauded by the world. He was praised. But in his heart of hearts, here's how he felt. He said, I spent six years in that unhappy, backslidden state. So the world was no substitute for what had happened in his soul that day that he did come to Christ. And he didn't go on with God and take a stand for the Lord and tell others of the love of Christ. And he acknowledged that the love of the world crept in. And he began to grow cold. And it is worth remembering that. And that's why I draw it to your attention tonight. Because there are things that can dull a Christian's love for the Savior. They can take over a person's life. It doesn't have to be cricket. It doesn't have to be sport. It could be anything. Career. Business. Whatever. Pastimes. There's many, many things. Possessions. But they can take over a Christian's life. They can consume a Christian. That's all they're taken up for. That's all that they live for. And as a result, they're not living for Christ. They're not putting the Lord first. They're not loving Christ first and foremost, and everything else comes second by a long way. Something else takes over. Something else sits on the throne of their lives, and Christ is dethroned. And yet, as I say, during that time, C.T. Studd was possibly the greatest cricketer that England ever produced. And the fact that he's not more renowned and well known today is because the Lord in mercy restored him. He only played for England just over a year. He won 39 test caps as a cricketer, 37 test caps rather, as a test cricketer. And the Lord intervened and he gave it up. But if he had gone on, he would have been renowned as one of the greatest cricketers that there was. W.G. Grace is renowned and revered still in cricketing circles in England as being a great batsman. Well, W.G. Grace and C.T. Studd were contemporaries. They played in the same England team. And it was by common acknowledgement that C.T. Studd was a better cricketer than W.G. Grace. But the only reason that Studd is not more well known today is because the Lord intervened in his life, restored him, and he turned his back on cricket because he realized it was a snare. And therefore it is a warning to us all this evening not to be ensnared by something. We were thinking this morning and last Lord's Day as well about ending well as a Christian. Well, if we want to end well, make sure something doesn't ensnare us. Something doesn't take over our life and actually then begin to control us and dominate our lives, and the Lord gets pushed out to the side and pushed out to the very extremes. He was at Eden during those first years of backsliding. As I've mentioned, the three brothers played in the same team. When C.T. Studd got to his final year, when he was in his 19th year of age, 1879, he captained the cricket team at Eton. In the next year, 1880, approaching his 20th birthday, he followed his two older brothers on to Cambridge, Trinity College, Cambridge University. And again, all three of them played in the first 11 cricket team. He captained the university cricket team in the last year that he was there, 1883. It was then, at that time, in his second year and into the last year at university, that he was selected to play for England. And as I said, he went on to win 37 test caps. But remember, all that time, he said, I spent 6 unhappy years in a backslidden state. And yet all of these honours and privileges were coming to him. It was during that last year at Cambridge that he captained the team to victory over the touring Australian side. It's hard to believe that the Australians had never beaten the English in England up until that point in time, and all the test matches that had taken place in England now. Australia had never won. That year they did win, and we'll mention that in a moment. But it just underscores how strong the Australian team was that came to tour in England in that particular year. For the first time, they were going to defeat England in a test match. But they played Cambridge in one of the lesser games, and C.T. Studd was captaining the team at that particular time. He scored a century in the first innings, and when he was bowling, he took 5 wickets for 64 runs. In the second innings, he hit the winning runs to beat the Australians by 6 wickets. That summer, C.T. Studd scored 2 out of only 3 centuries that were made against the touring Australian team. 2 out of 3, C.T. Studd scored those centuries. He was viewed as an exceptional player. And you can imagine how the cricketing world viewed him and looked upon him and the praise that was heaped upon his shoulders. But I bring you back to what he said. I spent 6 unhappy years in a backslidden state. There's no substitute. There's nothing that replaces knowing Christ and living for Christ and fellowshipping with Christ. Once somebody has tasted of the sweet waters of the gospel, there's nothing that replaces those. You can rise to the very heights. You can be another C.T. Studd and have all the praise of the world. But he spent 6 unhappy years. C.T. Studd played in the famous game when the term the Ashes was coined. I've mentioned the fact that it was the first time that the Australians had ever beaten England at cricket in England. It was at the Oval in Surrey that match took place. And after the defeat of the England team, there was a satirical obituary that was published in a British newspaper. It was called the Sporting Times. And after that victory in 1882 by the Australians at the Oval, as I said, it was the first test match win that they had on English soil, there was this satirical obituary that appeared in that newspaper. And one of the lines in that satirical obituary said, the body of English cricket will be cremated and the ashes taken to Australia. And that is the first time that the term the Ashes was ever coined. And C.T. Studd played in that match. Played in those 3 matches. England won the Test Series 2-1. But they lost that one match at the Oval. He was in the team. That was the game that this phrase, the Ashes, was coined. The next year, 1883, C.T. Studd toured Australia with the England team. And the captain, he wasn't captaining the England team at that time, but the captain of the England team vowed, and I quote, we will regain those ashes. And that's how that whole term, the Ashes, and if you follow sport or cricket at all, and you'll understand something, I'm sure, of that term and the significance of it. But that's how that whole term came about, when there was that satirical obituary, and then the captain the next year said, we're going to Australia to regain those ashes. That's exactly what England did. And C.T. Studd played his part Again, in Australian soil, they beat the Australians 2-1 in the Test series. He was at the top of his powers as a cricketer. But remember what he said, I spent 6 unhappy years in a backslidden state. And for all the praise, his heart was not right with God, and there was no joy and no peace in his soul. And it is a warning. It is a warning. And we make sure that things do not take hold of our lives and become a snare to us and take us away from the Lord. But thankfully, that all changed in 1884. It all changed because there were two ladies who set about praying for C.T. Studd. They knew a little bit about him. They knew the fact that he was away from the Lord. And they set about praying that the Lord would have mercy upon this young man that had been saved and professed to follow the Lord, but had gone away from the Lord. And they started to pray that the Lord would intervene in his life and bring him back to the Lord. It wasn't very long in that year, 1884, that his older brother George was taken seriously ill. And C.T. Studd sat by his bedside as he hovered between life and death. And C.T. Studd tells the story. I'm going to give you a quote of what he said. And as he sat by that bedside, he was confronted with this question. Now, what is all the popularity of the world worth to George? Now, remember, George was a cricketer as well. I mean, just not to the same level as C.T. Studd, but quite a cricketer in his own right. But this is what C.T. Studd said to himself. Now, as his brother is lying on what seemed to be his deathbed, although the Lord was gracious and raised him up and he survived, but there he is, hovering between life and death, and C.T. Studd said to himself, now, what is all the popularity of the world worth to George? What is all the fame and the flattering worth? What is it worth to possess all the riches of the world when a man comes to face eternity? What's it all worth when you come to face eternity? That's a question that's worth asking tonight. What's it all worth? What's it worth to pursue the world? To be lauded by the world? To have the riches of the world? What's it worth when you come to die? When you're lying on your deathbed, what's it worth? Absolutely nothing. It's not worth anything. And C.T. Studd says that the voice in his mind and in his heart answered with the words of Scripture, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. And how true that is. You can have all the praise of the world and it's vanity. It's empty. That's what the word vanity means. Emptiness. It's empty. It's hollow. And it's certainly hollow when you come to die. It's worth absolutely nothing. And as a result of those circumstances, those two women that started to pray for him particularly, the sickness of his older brother George, the Lord brought him back to himself. And I quote, all those things had become as nothing to my brother. He only cared about the Bible and the Lord Jesus Christ. And God taught me the same lesson. In his love and goodness, he restored my brother to health. And as soon as I could get away, I went to hear Mr. Moody. There the Lord met me again and restored me to the joy of his salvation. Still further, and what was better than all, he set me to work for him. And I began to try and persuade my friends to read the gospel and to speak to them individually about their souls. These are his own words of what happened at that particular time and how the Lord brought him back to himself. And then he went on to say, I cannot tell you what joy it gave me to bring the first soul to the Lord Jesus Christ. I've tasted almost all the pleasures of this that this world can give. I do not suppose there is one that I have not experienced. But I can tell you that those pleasures were as nothing compared to the joy that the saving of that one soul gave me. These are his words of the Lord having mercy on him and intervening in his life. Not only restoring him, but giving him a burden. And as a result, we'll come back another night and pick this up, but he abandoned cricket altogether. And he became one of those what was known as the Cambridge Seven. Seven missionaries that left England to go to China. C.T. Studd was one of those seven. And we'll take that story up another night and think a little bit about it. But I finish with this quote. When you think of the part that sport particularly played in taking him away from the Lord. This is what he had to say. I do not say, don't play games or cricket and so forth. By all means, play and enjoy them. Give thanks to Jesus for them. Only take care that games do not become an idol to you, as they did to me. What good will it do to anybody in the next world to have been the best player that ever has been? And then think of the difference between that and winning souls for Jesus Christ. And may those words even strike our hearts this night. What is the point of living for this world? Even if you were to be the very best at something, the very best at something you could ever be, and nobody rivaled you. C.T. Studd said, think of the difference between that and winning souls for Jesus Christ. Well, he thought about the difference, and that's why he turned his back on cricket, went to be a missionary. We haven't even got to that place. I started off by saying that he was a missionary that has sacrificed his wealth and his health, and we'll pick up that point as well. He sacrificed everything so that he might go and tell others of Christ. As I close tonight, I wonder, does the Lord have all our heart? Does the Lord have all our heart? Or is there something that's got a little hold of it? Are we in danger of becoming ensnared with something? And I trust that we might be out and out for Christ. And if we know not Christ as Savior at all, then that John 3 and 16 will be applied to our hearts in a saving way as they were to C.T. Studd that weekend. And that we might be challenged to believe on him and perish not, and have everlasting life.